How Coyote Learned All the Songs by Nadja Rehberger. There is a Chinese laundry in town, owned by Mr. Zhao, a Chinaman who came to America during the gold rush. The laundry's front door is always open, but in order to enter, the customer has to pass through a bead curtain. It jangles, the transparent little glass pearls brush against the customer's skin like a hardened memory of rain. Inside, the laundry smells strongly of soap, with an undercurrent of incense. Mrs. Zhao is a short, squat woman with reddened eyes and graying hair. Her hands have been turned into those of a woman much older by the constant immersion in the hot, soapy laundry water. All day long, she stands behind the counter and deals without many words with the customers who bring their clothes. She makes no attempt at conversation beyond the barest necessities because she knows it is futile. She came to America long years ago, and since then has lived in a closed-off space of home, work, family, protected by a barrier of language and difference. By now, this space is all Mrs. Zhao cares about. Her world is the exact shape and size of the laundry. But her daughter is a beautiful girl, dressed in silk and pale-skinned, and nothing protects her from the surging gaze of strangers. Zhao Ping is somewhat past the right age for a young girl to be married, though many have proposed to her, wordlessly, in the dark. She can be glimpsed hiding behind another bead curtain next to the large idol in the back of the room, catching their eyes with her dark gaze, then averting her face. The idol that guards her and the world below is a gaudy, demonic thing in red and gold, with fierce claws and large teeth. To some it seems like a dragon, to others like a tiger, and those who drift toward it with hollow eyes and hunger in their soul, the girl behind the curtain will take by the hand and lead down into the basement. There came a time when the people began asking, "Where shall we go? So many people are in the land, and more are coming. The rivers are filled with boats, and the plains are drenched in blood. The rocks are split open, and the forests shiver as if they feel winter coming in the height of summer. There is talk of violence whenever two people meet." "Let us go to the north," Brother Wolf said. "We can hide in the snow, where life is hard, and the white men will not follow." "But I have come from the north," Sister Goose said, "and greedy men are looking for gold there, as if it will fill their bellies." "No," Deer said, shaking his antlers. "We must fight for our territory. That is the only way." The people talked for a long time, but their talk went in circles, as all things did at that time. Some of them were missing, and nobody spoke of them, because they knew Brother Buffalo and Beaver would not come any more. But no one missed Coyote, who only ever came in order to make mischief. When he finally slunk into their fire's circle of light, they looked at him in distaste, because he carried with him the sharp smell of drink. "Finally, Coyote has come. Speak to us, our sage adviser," they jeered. "Shall we make a big ladder and climb to the moon, or live in burrows deep under the earth like the mole?" "You shall go nowhere," Coyote told them, and for once he was serious, and they listened. "I have talked to the white men, and they have taught me many things. They have taught me that things will no longer run in a circle, because the white men have made time run straight forward, like a mad cow in a stampede." Two men are in the basement of Mr. Zhao's laundry tonight. There's a brazier and several red lanterns, their light getting caught in the smoke that fills the room, which seems to be under water, and some blood-red, ephemeral sea. The two men lie sprawled on their narrow cots, almost like drowning men slowly sinking under the waves. Indian Jack rolls around to his side. His real names, the names he had as a boy and a man, are long forgotten, because there is no one to call him by them. He has no tribe, no home, only the fringes of the world to inhabit. His thin, bony fingers crawl over the wooden cot toward the pipe that lies next to it, on a small lacquer table. When he finds it, he traces its length, feeling the patterns engraved on it. The images of clouds and dragons speak a language alien to him, written in words that are no more comprehensible to his soul than the trickle of water in a stream is to his ears. He seems to crave the engravings more than the pipe itself, tracing them again and again, from the mouth of the pipe to the brass saddle, where poppy seed juice is turning into finest vapor. The other man stirs, getting restless. His time in the red cave of oblivion in the laundry's basement is nearly over. Already, there is a hint of light behind the tiny, dusty window to the upper world. He fiddles with something, a gold star, letting its rounded points stick into the skin of his calloused hands. Then he pulls himself into a sitting position, blinking the grime out of his eyes. "Got a hanging to attend, old Jean," he mutters to himself. "Gotta get these old bones moving." But there's still time, and the numbness of dreams is deserting Jean, leaving him jittery and nervous. Finally, he gets to his feet. Spurs jingle as he walks across the wooden floor. He doesn't make it to the stairs. Instead, he sits down heavily on Indian Jack's cot. Although he's awake and aware of the other man, Indian Jack doesn't move. Jean licks his dry, sprung lips. His hands are shaking. He pushes the gold star into his pocket and pulls out a wallet instead. He has more than enough money, and the Indian, he knows, is always short of money. "I've got a story to tell you," he says, "about the woolens they'll hang today. Brought them in myself. Dragged them 5 days through the desert back here. I could have shot them right there, you know. Could have left their bones in the desert for the vultures and coyotes. Nobody would have minded. But I kept them alive, just to see them hang." Indian Jack gives a small nod of agreement, sealing the deal. The money does not change hands. Instead, Jean tucks the rolled-up dollar bill into Indian Jack's shirt pocket without looking at him. Indian Jack doesn't care. He just lies back and listens to the story. The people laughed at Coyote's words. "How foolish!" But Wise Brother Wolf did not laugh. "If time shall go straight forward, then things that die will not live again. There will be winter without spring, and the white men will not go back to where they came from. If time is an arrow in flight, then some day it will fall to the ground and move no longer, and things will end. We will end, brothers and sisters." Coyote nodded eagerly, because he had come to the others with a cunning plan. "But fear not, friends, because I am sly, and I have made friends with the white men, and I know how we will trick them." The people did not respect Coyote, because he was as greedy as the white men, and as foolish. But they knew he could be shrewd, and the idea that things might end frightened them. They had never before had such an idea. Just thinking about the end was like drinking poisoned water. "What is your plan, Coyote?" "How do we make rain fall?" Coyote asked. "How do we make the sun come back in spring? How do boys become men and girls become women?" "We sing the songs one sings to make these things happen." Each living thing had its song, each activity, each time of year and day. Some were secret, and some known and loved by all. Some had only little power, and some could move the world. Coyote had often dreamed about the things he could do if he knew them all. "And how do we know when to sing them?" he egged them on. "Because we remember them." "Just so. This is what we will do. Each of you will give me their song, and I will keep them all. And when the land gets too small, and the rivers too crowded, and the plains can take blood no more, you will fall silent. But there is always room for me, because I am funny and foolish, and the white men like to laugh at me. I will be fed scraps at their fires, and I can play dog for them. I will stay, and I will remember your songs." The people were angry at Coyote for suggesting such a horrible plan, and they spat at him and called him names, but he only laughed, because he was drunk. "Out," Mr. Zhao says, brandishing a broom, when Indian Jack's money runs out. "You have no money. No money, no nothing. Understand, white man?" Indian Jack leaves without much protest, smiling at Zhao and the string of Chinese insults. Neither of them speaks good English, and although Indian Jack has picked up many tongues, Chinese still escapes him. That is why he likes Zhao's insults so much. They are no more than the patter of rain against a tent. He wanders through the town after Zhao has driven him out. The streets are empty in the midday sun, except for the gravedigger, wading in the shadows opposite the saloon. With the money Jean Devine gave him, Indian Jack could go and buy himself a bottle of whiskey. He has been a fixture in Bucetown as long as anyone can remember. To most people, it seems as if he has been there since before the days of Old Man Buse himself. They know he makes no trouble, and they don't fear him like they fear Charles Lafayette. While the gravedigger comes to take their dead bodies, Indian Jack only takes what they do not want. But the saloon is too noisy for Indian Jack's tastes, and the girls there too talkative. Inevitably, one of them will come to him, or sit down at the piano, and start singing, and he knows the songs well enough to understand them. Once he has heard them, they will crowd into his head, and he won't be able to forget them, like Mr. Zhao's insults. The church attracts him because it is silent, and his head hurts. He sits down on the front step, in the shadow of its sacred silence, and closes his eyes, waiting for someone to come and chase him away. No one comes until the rustle of skirts wakes him from his doze. He looks up and sees black boots and the dusty hem of a dress. Far above him looms the nervous face of Miss Butterfield, the Sunday school teacher. She wears glasses and carries a book, but her stockings are not blue, no matter what the saloon girls have said to Indian Jack. He grins, because he has looked under her skirts and thinks it might make her blush. She'd look prettier blushing. But Miss Butterfield is too preoccupied with missionary zeal to blush at Indian Jack's sleazy grin. "Have you come here to hear the words of Christ our Savior?" she asks, and he doesn't have the words to explain himself. So she takes him into the school building and starts to tell him the stories her people have brought over the sea, of another place with deserts and lakes and hills, and a man who died to save the souls of everyone else. But all Jack hears behind her words is the constant refrain of love, love for all the world, love for every single man, love unrequited and repressed, confused and deep-seated desire. When Miss Butterfield releases him, glowing with self-satisfaction, sure that soon his soul will also be saved, Indian Jack walks out into the desert and imagines meeting Jesus. They would sit down on a pair of rocks and watch the sun go down, and be silent with each other. But each moon, one or two of the people who had jeered at him for his horrible plan would come to Coyote in secrecy, ashamed and tired and worn out, and say, "There is no room for us any more, Coyote. Our numbers are diminished, our song is falling quiet. Take it and keep it." And Coyote promised to keep their songs all in his belly, and ate each of them. At last, Brother Wolf came to his younger brother. Coyote's belly was swollen with song, and his eyes so bright he could barely see Wolf. "Here is my song, little brother. But remember this, you are Coyote, and you can only sing Coyote's song. You will sing of Brother Beaver's hard work, but your tune will still be greedy. You'll sing of Sister Goose's love for her maid, but your thoughts will still be filled with lust and lechery. You'll sing of bears and buffalo's strength, but your words will be those of violence and malice. You'll sing of all the secrets the raven gave you, and of my wisdom, and you'll still be a fool. All our songs are in you now, and all our songs will be Coyote songs." "Ah," said Coyote and ate his brother, "but I am a good singer. No one will care." The sun is low when Indian Jack comes back to the Chinese laundry, this time approaching it from the back. Zhao Ping is washing clothes. He sits down quietly in the swaying shadow of her clothesline, enjoys the warm breeze that is cooled by the wet cloth, and smiles at her whenever she glances shyly at him. Zhao Ping giggles and tries to hide her face. Indian Jack knows how to beg. When he touches his lips, he knows that his meal is sure to arrive. Zhao Ping slips inside the house and comes back not much later with a bowl of steaming soup. Meat, vegetables, and noodles swim in it. Indian Jack would eat it if it were dirt. Zhao Ping starts singing quietly. Her song is Chinese, but Indian Jack understands the melody. It is the song of the girl whose parents do not want her to sing, and he would know it in any language. He doesn't want to hear it, but it is the price he pays for a free meal. When he had eaten all the songs of the people, the world fell quiet, because Coyote could not sing. His belly was bloated, and he rolled in the dust, moaning and aching. The trees bent down to him, and whispered in their green, leafy voices, "We have songs too, Coyote. Take them." and the clouds sank low and became mist, and with their small, small hands of water drummed on his skin. "We have songs too, Coyote. Take them." And the rocks came to him, one by one, until they were mountains, and Coyote whimpered when their booming voices ground against his head. "We have songs too, Coyote. Take them." Coyote felt as if he was bursting with song. He got up, swaying and stumbling like a newborn foal. And then he started to run, faster and faster, and his paws beat on the ground like the sound of drums, and the wind hissed in his coat, and the blood rushed in his ears, and he started screaming in a million colors. Everything he did was song. Everything he saw was song. He danced, mad and hurting and frightened, and everything he touched fed him its song. At last, Coyote came to a town of white men. "I have eaten too much," Coyote cried, "and I cannot stop eating. The world is turning into song. Ah, if only I could sleep." "Drink," the white men said, laughing at his foolish antics. "Smoke, and then dance for us." Fritz Breitinger has come from Switzerland to photograph the savages and write down their stories. He isn't satisfied with the ragged clothes and floppy hat Indian Jack wears, but knows how to solve the problem. "I have come to preserve the world as it is," he tells Indian Jack as he hands him feathers and costumes, all kinds of memorabilia he has gathered on his journey through the West. Indian Jack recognizes the remainders of great tribes, of dead tribes, of made-up peoples who never existed. "I must capture it in its natural state. You are already in a late stage, a stage of decay. Only your face is still as it should be." Indian Jack looks at the feathers and the leather clothes, and remembers, deep down, that as a younger man he loved to dress up, to disguise himself, to play pretend, and to trick his brothers and sisters. He makes the call of the eagle, and the call of the wolf, and puts the feathers on his head, laughing at Breitinger. The man frowns, shaking his head. "No, no," he says, his moustache quivering with disapproval. "Be like this?" He makes an angry, stern face. Indian Jack pulls a grimace, imitating a great black bear stung by a bee. "No, my Indian friend, more gravitas, look serious, noble." But Indian Jack can only be what he is. Eventually, fatigue and hollow need catch up with him. He stares tiredly into the direction of the laundry. This day was too long, and the days that came before were even longer, and the days yet to come will be longer still. Just then, Herr Breitinger looks up from his apparatus and rubs his hands. "Yes, like this, very good." There are flashes and smoke, and for a moment, as the picture is taken, Indian Jack feels lighter than before, as if some weight has been lifted from him. He waits until Breitinger is done packing up his things, then takes the money he was promised if he posed for a picture. It will buy him another night of silence. Finally, when the white men had seen enough, Coyote was allowed to stop dancing. Somewhere in the distance, people started singing songs they had learned from Coyote, songs of robbers and outcasts and thieves, of wilderness and adventure. In the house of smoke and oblivion, Coyote lay and dreamed.